Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us on this Wednesday. The NFL draft is tomorrow, and we're going to pop in with Neil Kulong in a few moments to talk about the NFL draft. But first, our play-by-play call of the day.
Three-two to Remy. Swung on. Driven to deep right center field. Ball's got some carry. Getting up. Down. A grand slam for Robinson Cano. And the Mariners are smoking it wide open at 9-0 over Houston.
Dave Sims, who, by the way, Dave is one of the great guys out there. I've known Dave for 25 years now. He now does the Mariners on TV. Robinson Cano is putting up numbers at historic levels and did so again last night with another big hit, big home run for Seattle. Dave Sims on the Mariners TV network. All right, we were talking earlier about Blaine Gabbert. Most of you just shook your heads. I think Neil Kulong shook his head as well, didn't you, Neil?
I'll say this. Right when you said Neil Kulong is shaking his head, that is literally exactly what I was doing. He was the 10th overall pick, by the way.
Yeah, it was 10th or 11th.
Very bad quarterback draft.
Sadly, I'm taking Gabbert over Kaepernick in San Francisco right now.
Yeah, so were they, apparently. What does that tell you?
I mean, to me, that's the equivalent of two Piper Cubs circling a fogged-in airport. I mean, I'm sorry, it's just not going to happen. All right, everybody on there is fighting.
It's also the reason, ironically, you have two teams trading half their draft to get up to get two players that really don't measure up well against the top quarterbacks drafted over the last couple of years. I mean, the value of the position increases with the more bad picks that are made. It's kind of bizarre.
Which I want to get into that just a little bit. You mentioned that these two quarterbacks would not be the top two picks in other years. There's no getting around it.
In many years, I'd say that's true, yeah.
No question. How difficult has it become for NFL personnel to get a handle on college quarterbacks because there are so many system quarterbacks now?
I think that's an excellent question. I remember Bill Parcells said something probably much earlier than he did than when I heard it a year or two ago. The pro game goes as the college game goes. Those players are developed in college, and the pro teams will end up selecting them based on the skills that they show in college. So in an indirect way, what you're getting from college is what you're going to see in the pros. Now, really, the question comes down to how many of those systems in college are really transferable in the NFL. And I think Gabbert is a great example of that, a highly successful college quarterback who played in a scheme a certain way that wasn't being done in the NFL. But you look at a team like San Francisco, the way that they're using him now versus what Jacksonville was trying to do with him, you get a little bit more run out of him. Now, I'm not going to go as far as to say he's one of the 20 best quarterbacks in the NFL, or if he is, then that's a different topic for a different day. But it comes down to how teams are willing to utilize that quarterback in whatever system they're doing. But you also have to do that with the limitation that if you stink 2 years in a row after drafting this guy, you're either out of a job or you're about to be out of a job and you're changing your system around. So the level of patience that might be needed to implement the kind of change that would help system types of quarterbacks succeed a little bit more than they have in the NFL, it just isn't going to be there. So you really have kind of you're stuck between two pulling forces of whether to utilize the player in the way that he's been playing, or do you really think that you can change him, break him all down, and build him back up in 2 years or less. That really is, in my opinion, the million-dollar question that NFL executives are not able to answer but are still continuing to try to do so.
Is this the problem for Paxton Lynch, the system he came out of, as to why you're not sure?
I think it is for Lynch in particular. I think he's a great example of it. You have a guy that is remarkably athletic for his size, for as big as he is. You don't really see quarterbacks moving around as well as he does. And at Memphis, they utilize that. You get a guy like that can see really high over the line of scrimmage and has a pretty decent arm. I mean, he can hit, you know, a dime from 40 yards away down the field. You put him under center, you give him, or you put him behind center, you give him the opportunity to move around a little bit and make throws on the run. That's going to work. Now, the question is, can you translate that into the NFL? And it's not so much, while this is true, you know, the defensive players are much more athletic. It's a little bit harder to kind of wait for things to break down and let your athletic, smart quarterback make a play on the move. But really, the issue is getting him outside the pocket. He's going to get tattooed by a 290-pound defensive lineman who's faster than, you know, the quarterback's running back when he was in college. It's dangerous. It's really hard to project the amount of injuries that a guy is going to take playing in that style. And you look at a guy like Robert Griffin, it's a good example of it. Injuries really hurt his career as well. But he was a guy that could succeed playing, you know, on the edge like that, playing on the run. But it works well until the guy gets hit, goes down, misses, you know, half the season.
The Steelers obviously are, as they usually are, drafting down, and which means that idealistically the person that I think they'd love to take may not be there. So at that spot, what are some of the options you think the Steelers might have in the first round?
Looking at the way I think it's going to shake out, a lot of it kind of depends on, over the second half of the draft, two picks, the way I see it. Washington at 21, which was a team that it could have made a very strong case that they're going to take a cornerback going into it, but the signing of Josh Norman kind of takes that away.
Yes.
And it puts defensive Josh Norman of the Panthers, the guy who signed the $75 million contract. I don't think that was their plan either. I don't think a whole lot of people expected the Panthers to take the franchise tag off of him and make him a free agent so close to the draft. That changes Washington's strategy around a little bit. They're not going to take a cornerback, but they very well could go into defensive line, which is probably the deepest position in the draft, and it's one I feel the Steelers would have liked to have had available to them at 25. But you take another one of those players out, does that, you know, kind of bump up the influence of the teams drafting 22 through 24, team especially like Cincinnati? I think they would love to have a guy like Andrew Billings if he's going to be available. That's a player that the Steelers have spent ample amount of time with this offseason, definitely, you know, showing all the signs that this is somebody that they'd like to take if he's going to be there. He might not be now. So at the same time, that cornerback that Washington didn't take could be there. So you have a guy like maybe William Jackson III out of Florida State, Mackenzie Alexander out of Clemson, Eli Apple out of Ohio State. These are guys that, you know, they might not have had all three of those options available, but it could work out that way. And on top of that, you have, you know, what could be a dozen different positions that suffer just due to the craze of quarterbacks. These guys that, you know, get drafted probably a bit higher than they should, all things being equal. You never know when a guy could, you know, just randomly get taken in the first round, something you didn't expect, and that bumps down other talented players. I mean, you look at the wide receivers that are there. Corey Coleman out of Baylor, I think, is a phenomenal player. I'm really surprised nobody's talking about him going higher than you know, the early to mid-20s. Guys like that can fall. You never know. I think the Steelers would adjust to that if it comes up. And really, to put it simply, it's waiting for the draft to come to you, which is something Kevin Colbert talks about all the time.
And you do have to have the draft come to you. What about subsequent rounds now? Let's talk about subsequent rounds, because this, you know, there's so much put on the first round, the first pick. There's so much value other places. And my understanding is, Neil, that if you were to poll 15 general managers in the league, their 18 through 50 picks would be a complete jumble as to where they thought everybody fell. Does that tell you about the depth of the draft and also the varying opinions?
I think it's more the opinions, to be honest with you. I think the emphasis, obviously, is put in the first round. That's where the attention is. That's when you have the most the spotlight is going to burn on you the brightest in the first round. If you screw it up, you're going to get, you know, you're going to catch flack from everybody for it. And scouts are going to lose jobs and things like that. So you get why the emphasis is there, but I agree 1,000% with you as far as really the late 20s through the 50s. A lot of these guys are going to be equal. And on top of that, you're going to have a lot of teams that value one player as a second-round pick, and another team value him as a fifth-round pick. And then it's a big surprise when all of a sudden you hear that name being called out. And you go through all of that, it's really tough to see the difference between a first-round pick and a second-round pick. And in my opinion, more often than not, what it really is one intangible question mark. It could be a character concern. It could be trouble in their past. It's the one thing that takes them out of the first round, but the guy is otherwise as talented as anybody else in the first round. So looking at that, I think you see a team's emphasis on character, on certain traits of a player, and Seattle does a good job of this. They draft certain athletes. That's what they want all the time. It's not so much about collegiate production for them as it is what they can build them into. They really are a system-based team, and they're going to bring in the cogs that do that. The Steelers, I see as being a team that's gotten away from that a little bit. They really like to either go steadfast and solid in the second round, or they go ultimate risk gamble kind of guy that you're not quite sure what you're going to get out of him. Senquez Golson is a guy that failed a lot of physical tests, but he showed nothing but production on the field. He was a guy that found his way to the ball all the time. He's probably a third or fourth round pick to a lot of teams. Somebody like Seattle in particular that values size, they're not going to take Senquez Golson. But the Steelers, don't really look at that as much, and they want to see, a steadily producing kind of player available in the second round. And perhaps that's to kind of offset the risk of a highly talented athlete in Bud Dupree that barely had any football experience that was worth mentioning as far as a first round pick. So they like to kind of offset one to the other, I think. And in that, to me, it just kind of suggests it's not so much where this guy is in a straight line. It's more, does he fit into what we want, or does he have something extraordinary that we feel we could get more out of him because of it? And it creates a very muddled picture with the Steelers in the middle rounds. You never quite know what they're going to do.
Neil, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for having me.
Neil Coulong joining us on the show. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Subaru Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Neil and I talked about the bottom line is, Sean, it is not the job, contrary to popular belief, it is not the job of college coaches to make players NFL ready. It is the job of college coaches to make the player as good as possible, but win games that they're playing. That's their job. So it's not your job as a college coach, for example, to sit there and, I'm going to do the best I can to make Paxton Lynch an NFL quarterback. That's not your job. Your job is to win games at Memphis, and what's the best way to do it? Okay, this is the system I have. I believe in this system. I believe that he can play in this system and do the job. Okay? So that's why when you look at it, you say, well, it's their job to do that. No, it's not their job. It is not their job to do the NFL's job. It's not. It's their job to win games with the players that they have. If it turns out you can get to the next level, great. Some of the great quarterbacks that we've had in college football, never played it down in the NFL. Never played it down in the NFL. Why? Because it was the system they ran. Rex Kern was a great college quarterback in the 60s, in the late 60s. Rex Kern never played it down in the NFL. He played defensive back. Jack Mildren was as fine an option quarterback in the wishbone as you're going to find. Never played it down in the NFL. It wasn't the job of Chuck Fairbanks and Barry Switzer to get Jack Mildren ready to play in the NFL. It wasn't Woody Hayes' job to get Rex Kern ready to play in the NFL. It was their job to win games at Oklahoma and Ohio State, respectively. That's the job that you have. You have right today the quarterback crop, and there's going to be a run on them. I mean, if I'm Connor Cook, Christian Hackenberg, and so forth, I'm anxious now to see where Paxton Lynch goes and how early. If Lynch goes in the first 10 picks, Sean, that now opens the door to a potential run saying, look, I got to get mine now, and then we'll take care of other things later.
I'm thinking there could be one of two positions that'll be a run on tomorrow night in the first round. It's either going to be cornerback or quarterback. It's going to be one of those two.
It's going to be one of the two, no question. And that's what you're going to get out of all this. Offensive tackle's one where I think there's an abundance. Defensive tackle, defensive line, there's an abundance of guys. It's one thing you noticed at the Senior Bowl, that when they went to do drills at the Senior Bowl, there was a long line of guys doing drills at the Senior Bowl. They told you about the depth that they have at that position. So you have to be able to distinguish yourself some way. Carl Nassib, for example, distinguished himself by having the highest Wunderlich score among all defensive linemen. Austin Johnson was number one in Wunderlich when it came to all the defensive tackles. So you distinguish yourself. The league does want smart players. Don't get too hung up, depending on position, on a 40 time. Joey Bosa's 40 time isn't great, but guess what? His 10 time is really good. His 10 time is really good. You are not just timed on 40. You are timed on 10 and 20. His 10 time is really good. His 20 time's not bad either. His 40 time, eh. Well, how many times are you going to expect Joey Bosa to run 40 yards downfield? And Bosa will be one of the top 10 guys picked in the draft. Jalen Smith of Notre Dame, you feel awful for him. You feel completely awful for him. He was going to be one of the first five guys taken off the board. Now with nerve damage in the knee, it's going to take a little bit as to when he's drafted and whomever picks him, and they're going to be taking a chance.
So getting back to quarterbacks for tomorrow night, if we do see a run in quarterbacks, and if there's a splash trade somewhere, like let's say Denver wants to move up and take Pittsburgh's pick at 25, something like that, a scenario like that pops up. Obviously, that could increase Christian Hackenberg's chances of getting taken tomorrow night.
Right. Well, it could. It's going to depend on who's doing the moving. I mean, you may see, for example, a couple teams maybe move down to get an additional pick with the idea they're still going to pick them because they think they can get them later in the first round. Or maybe they wait till the second round. I mean, you could roll the dice and you say to yourself, all right, let's go to the second round, which has been our plan the entire time. Because I know in the second round, he does not get past the second round. That does not happen. You can talk about his footwork, but that's something you can work on that. Does he have the arm strength? Yes. Can he make all the throws? Absolutely. Jim Haslett's been a head coach and the defensive coordinator in the NFL for a decade and a half. I had long talks with Jim Haslett last year. Christian Hackenberg can make all the throws, all of them, and he's the first one to tell you. When his footwork is right, his accuracy is really good. Now, that's a big part of the NFL game. A big part of the NFL game is, are you accurate and leading guys into yards after the catch? Because yards after the catch is another indication you're trying to get any advantage you can over the opponent. Being a station-to-station passing game doesn't usually do that. Trying to get that advantage is leading them in the yards after the catch. You have to, again, build your team trying to eliminate your weaknesses. The Redskins did that with Josh Norman. We outlined yesterday all of their deficiencies against long passes. That passes of 20 yards or better, they're among the worst in the league. Norman helped solve that. All right, final half hour, more on the NFL draft. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome. Great to have you with us here on this Wednesday as we continue. And we're talking about the NFL draft, which, of course, will start tomorrow. There are various ways to solve your team's problems or to make them better. One of them is to go out and get the job done in free agency. Another is to try and get it through the NFL draft. And another is when you're handed a gift out of nowhere. And that's what the Redskins did with Josh Norman. I mean, did anybody really believe after he was franchise tagged by Carolina that he was going to end up with the Washington Redskins 6 weeks later? Nobody did. Now, did the Redskins overpay? I think that's irrelevant as to whether they overpaid. You're a fan. What do you care how much they paid? I don't care how much my team pays for players. It doesn't matter to me. I just want to know if they're going to be better. I think that he makes them better. I always find it laughable when I hear they're paying him $25 million. What the heck do you care? It's not your money. Most of you don't go to games anyway. Now you do have to pay for it, obviously, in your cable bill. We know that. But they paid $15 million. Okay, fine. That's one of the weakest parts of their football team. They're going to have to get a pass rush to help him. That's where I think they're going to draft. The Eagles, on the other hand, have this bizarre situation when it comes to Sam Bradford, and they're going to draft probably Carson Wentz. Now, Carson Wentz is not even a top 10 pick in most NFL drafts. Jared Goff is not a top 10 pick in most NFL drafts. They just aren't. They just aren't. And that's as simple as it gets. You're just not. And I think that when you look at the when you look at everything that they do, as players. Look, Goff's going to start right away with the Rams. It's going to be a fresh start. They're going to go to the Coliseum, and they're going to get rolling with the franchise out there. He will be their franchise guy. The idea, they want to have him for 10 years. Okay. Wentz is the guy that's supposed to be the miracle worker that goes into Philadelphia. Bradford kind of holds the fort for a little bit if they don't trade him, and then he gets a chance to then really take the reins himself. Now, I just mentioned Wunderlich. I think Carson Wentz, I believe, scored the highest of anybody in the Wunderlich test. And you're saying, well, you know what? You know, why do we talk about the Wunderlich test? Well, we talk about the Wunderlich test because the NFL does not want dumb guys. The NFL is a very complicated, it's not as simple. Because you have so many elite athletes, you've got to do something with something where it's not easy to figure out. That's why we talk about Christian Hackenberg, for example. What's a big plus for him? I can send him over to the whiteboard right now with a magic marker and say, okay, put up this play. Bang, he can put up the play. Two, Tell me what's the first thing you're identifying when you look at the defense. He'll tell you the mic. Three, what's the next thing you're going to identify? All right, where are they going to come from with the blitz? So I'm going to identify to my guys based on the front who I consider up and who I consider down. to then tell my offensive lineman what protection we're going to, which then brings us to number four. Then what do I do with the running back? Do I move the running back over, for example, to then pick up that blitz? And then what play do I check to as number five out of it? Most quarterbacks coming into the league from the draft can not do that. Can't. They can't do it.
That's an issue. I'd have to say
that's a big issue.
The one thing I would have to say after watching John Gruden's QB camp with Christian Hackenberg that just jumped off the screen for me was just how impressed Coach Gruden was with Christian at the whiteboard.
Right, exactly. Exactly. I mean, that's a big part of it. I mean, that's a big part of it. I mean, you put him up there, and they look. Gruden was blown away by that.
Yeah, out of all the other shows, all the other quarterbacks, I didn't get that reaction from him with the other quarterbacks he met with.
No, because, you know, that's one thing I've laughed about for the last 2 years with people talking about James Franklin's system. Well, in James Franklin's system, you know, his system and Bill O'Brien's system, yeah, are there differences? There's no question there are differences. But that's not different. Pre-snap is not different in the two systems. James Franklin expected a lot from his quarterbacks pre-snap to set protections, alerts, where's the mic, who's up, who's down, where's the tailback, what do I do? I mean, all of that is all pro stuff, and James Franklin, just like Bill O'Brien, had Christian Hackenberg doing that on every single down, practice or a game. That's where the difference comes in. That's where the difference comes in. And I think that, you know, when you look at this, that's a big part of this. He should not be playing next year. In 2017, he should not be playing. And when you look at him, if you get him into the action in his second year, it's going to make a big difference. It'll make a big difference. He needs, I think, just a year to get in there, absorb what's going on, understand the language. Because that's one thing that, you know, when you change systems, the language changes a bit. There may be some similarities to each system, but the language and how it's and how you spew it out to your teammates and how it's communicated to you. The next part is there's also a big difference, too, in that you're going to be getting your calls in your helmet and not from a signal on the sideline. So with crowd noise and everything like that, you have to be able to hear and then interpret to your teammates what you were being told in your helmet. Instead of looking at a signal on the sideline, and then because that's the system you're used to, and then telling them what's going on. Now, should they have that in college? Yeah, there's enough money to do it. Believe me, there's enough money to do it. But I don't... to me, that's the biggest advantage he has over everybody else. Paxton Lynch is a system guy. They don't do that at Memphis. Carson Wentz is a system guy. They don't do that at North Dakota State. Jared Goff's a system guy. They don't do that at Cal. They're all going to have to learn that. He doesn't have to learn it. I think Connor Cook did have to do that at Michigan State. But the pre-snap stuff, which is in a lot of ways the most difficult part, he's got. I mean, that's the key right there. He's got that part. I know we picked on him a few times, and I've not meant at all to pick on him at all, but it is a great example of Bryce Petty, who set, you name the record, he set it at Baylor after RG3. He can't speak the NFL language. Now, is that his fault? No. Is that Art Briles' fault? No. Art Briles is using a system that he thinks gives Baylor the best chance to win. That's Art Briles' job. Art Briles' job is not to make Bryce Petty an NFL, or the current guy, Seth Russell, an NFL quarterback. If it happens, that's terrific. It's great for your program. It's great for the kid. It's great across the board for a lot of, you know, for a lot of people. You like to walk into a living room and say, look, we can deliver NFL quarterbacks. And I think that when you look at this and you check it out, I mean, that pre-snap stuff is so important in this league to get you into the right protection, the right play, and give you the best chance of succeeding. Now, where does he have to be better? Okay, he has to be better with his footwork. We know that. That's been an obvious thing from day one. He needs to be better with his footwork. Really good footwork leads to really good accuracy. And the other part is Christian was not consistent enough in his 3 years of going to the check down guy. Now, he did a better job this year throwing the ball away when he had to, taking it down. That's why he went from 12 touchdowns and 16 interceptions to 16 touchdowns and just 6 interceptions this year. That's a big reason why. But he did not utilize that check down enough. And the odd thing is, Sean, I watched him in practice, and Christian was constantly check down, check down, check down. Got in the game, wouldn't do it. Now, he's got to be better at that. He's got to be. Almost all the quarterbacks in this league have to be better at that.
So the other app,
they have to.
The other thing that we was focused on last week on the Gruden QB camp show was Christian's footing. Now, was that something like in year two, first year with head coach James Franklin, was that something that you and Jack talked about, like during timeouts or during any game prep? Was that something that was brought up?
We always talked about his footwork. That's an area he had to work on. But I'll be honest with you. Until I watched the Gruden QB camp, I never noticed he put his left foot back versus his right foot. I always knew he put one foot back, but I didn't realize he switched. I never knew. I never knew he switched which foot he put back. You know, I'm not sitting there watching, like, what's he doing with his feet? All right. My big thing about his feet was, was he giving away what he was going to do? In other words, are you setting up your feet in a certain way where you're giving away what the play might be? And there have been a couple quarterbacks here where I've seen that, where suddenly it's going to be a pass play that, you know, and they're under center, they put that foot way back. And you're saying to yourself, well, you're tipping the play. That's what I've looked at over the years. I never realize he switched which foot he put back until I saw the QB camp. I don't know. I give Gruden all the credit in the world for that. All right, we will come back, wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Welcome back. We'll wrap things up for today here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. By the way, a week from today, we'll be at the Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament. And looking forward to that very much. The Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament at the Susquehanna Valley Country Club to benefit the greater Susquehanna Valley YMCA will be out there. Sean will be signing autographs. Have we had confirmation yet from the suit whether he's going to show up or not?
He's checking with his doctors on availability. So
his doctors?
Yeah. He said, I got to make sure I get the green light so I'm good to go.
His doctor?
Yeah. Yeah, he wants to make sure he wants to make sure that he's in tip-top shape and all clear, that he's able to pull off 18 next Wednesday.
We're in a cart.
No, he's just making sure he's going to be in good shape and ready to go to tackle the 18 so he doesn't let the team down.
Yeah, but he is going to let the team down. We're just going to have...
But this could open up the door for Mr. Mueller.
Nah, Mole Man can't make it.
Oh, jeez.
No, Mole Man can't make it. So a year from now, we can get Mole Man to make it. I think a year from now, we can get Hammer to make it. All right, this week, okay, it's up to Dr. Kildare as to whether he's cleared or not. This is, I'm sorry, he needs a doctor's note to do this? Wow. Brutal. Absolutely brutal. Huh. All right. I mean, he could even make a guest appearance on the show.
I would hope he'd at least do that, yeah.
You know, and then, you know, he could do maybe something on the Indianapolis 500, and then we could act like we're done for the month.
Get it out of the way? Okay.
All right, no show tomorrow, by the way. The Phillies are going to take on the Washington Nationals tonight, 7:05, 6:30 the airtime. Then they'll play tomorrow afternoon, although, you know, we may still have a show anyway. It's supposed to rain tomorrow, isn't it? It's supposed to rain tomorrow.
I'll be honest with you. They didn't check the D.C. forecast for tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. No. The D.C. forecast I haven't checked here. It's going to rain.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see the what the Phillies are going to do with the rotation with the tough news that came down this afternoon about Charlie Morton.
The Charlie Morton thing is tough in a couple of ways. The Phillies are in a spot right now where they don't have a big margin for error. That's a big problem. And this is what you're going to find with them over the next year and a half or so. That an injury to Charlie Morton, for example, sets them back. And it sets them back maybe more than some because... For a couple reasons. There's maybe not a pitcher they're willing to bring up right now to fill that void. Because, again, you're trying to do this in such a way where you're playing games with your contracts, too. You know, how do I get the most out of a contract with a young player? We saw that with Chris Bryant last year with the Cubs. We've seen that before with Bryce Harper. And there are others where they wait a little bit before they bring them up. Gregory Polanco with the Pirates. Because it allows them to get more time out of that player with the organization.
Yeah, for those who didn't catch over the lunch hour when this story broke, turns out Morton had the injury during the Milwaukee Brewers game back on April the 23rd. MRI earlier this week showed a torn left hamstring, and surgery is scheduled for Monday for Charlie.
All right. And so he's going to be out, and now you've got to figure out how do you fill that void. Well, he's a veteran pitcher that's been out there. He understands the adjustments you have to make. Younger pitcher's not going to be able to do that. And they probably had a game plan as to when they wanted to move certain people into the rotation. And this upsets the apple cart a bit of when to do that.
It was a good back and forth game last night, up 2-0 early, and was able to come out with the win late.
Yeah, no, I mean, they're fine. I mean, they're playing 500 ball right now. There's nothing wrong with how the Phillies are playing. The Phillies are playing fine. I'll tell you right now, it would help them exponentially, if they could get some production out of first base. I mean, that would help them more than, because they're getting nothing out of first base right now. You can sit there and you can complain all you want about Ryan Howard, but guess what? Darren Ruff's not doing anything. The difference is Ruff makes a lot less money, and the long national financial nightmare is almost over with Ryan Howard All right. I guess we're off tomorrow, unless there's a hurricane. We'll be back Friday. We'll tell you about the Eagles' first pick, Carson Wentz. We're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, K Routes 11 and 15. And Hummelsworth, the Phillies tonight at 6:30 with a 7:05 opening pitch right here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.